CQ, 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 Arizona, and welcome to Ham Radio and More, the only show of its kind in America. I'm your host, Len Winkler, KB7, LPW, and today's show is sponsored by Antennas West, Wallpaper World, AEA Incorporated, and Ken Nichols of Linda Brack Auto Mall. Our phone number is 241-1510, 241-1510, or in DXLAN, we will pay for the call, 1-800-293-KFNN, 1-800-293-KFNN. My guests today are from AMSAT, and we're going to have Larry Brown, NW7N. He'll be on the line from Tucson, and in studio, we have Gary Beaver, N7NQM, here in studio. We'll get to them in a moment. Next week, my guests are going to be Morgan Hoagland, WW7B, and he'll be here to and Mike Henry. They'll both be here to discuss Amtor, RIDI, and a few other interesting forms of digital communication. Remember that this coming Saturday night, January the 11th, is the annual DX Awards Banquet, which starts at 7 p.m. Cost is $10 per person, and you do need advance reservations. I don't know, it says on the brochure that it stops on the 4th of January, but hopefully if you do want to go and you haven't made your reservations, you'll be able to give a phone call to Fred Hewells, N7PNK, at 843-3368, 843-3368, and you can still make your reservations for that event. Again, it's $10 per person. And Vince Thompson, K5VT, the Dayton DXer of the Year, is going to be the guest speaker at that event. You're invited, if you don't go to the DX banquet, you're invited to attend our monthly transmitter hunt. And that'll take place this Saturday night, of course, at 7 p.m. sharp. That's 7 p.m. sharp at 7th Avenue and Camelback. 7th Avenue and Camelback in the Target parking lot. Everyone's invited to attend. T-Hunt is really loads of fun. I encourage you to come and participate. Be there early, as we usually start right on time. And if you want to hunt in your own vehicle, you do need a 2-meter radio. That would definitely be of help. And a beam would also be helpful. And for more information on the T-Hunt, you can give me a call after the show at 241-1510. I'll be happy to give you some information. You're listening to KFNN AM 1510. Imagine a noiseless 5-pound solar power supply made of space-age materials that for the next 25 years could keep your repeater on the air continuously, or your home station on the air for, let's say, up to 15 hours per week with no electricity bills, no noise, no maintenance, and no worries at all. That's just what a solar-powered supply can do, and especially if you get it from Antennas West. If you throw in the fact that it can be unobtrusively attached to the roof of your home or your RV or tossed in a closet till you need it, you have a flexible approach to power independence. The advantage of a solar power supply is that, you know, it'll be running quietly whenever the sun is shining. While here in Arizona, which is very, very often, of course, except the last few days, we don't know what sun is, it'll be replacing the power you use and keeping the batteries charged to full capacity. And your solar power supply keeps doing it and doing it and doing it without maintenance or further expense. It comes with a 30-foot cord all ready to connect to your battery. Just attach the wires, put the panel out in the sun, and you'll be charging ahead. When you want to pick up and move, just coil up the cord, stow the panel in your closet, and that's all there is to it. You also find your receiver is quieter with solar power than with commercial power. And try it risk-free from Antennas West. So give Jim Stevens, KK7C, at Antennas West a phone call and order a power supply, a solar power supply. Or you can get more information from Jim. Call 1-800-926-7373, 1-800-926-7373, and tell Jim Ham Radio and More sent you, and you get a special discount. Now to my guest today. Again, we have Larry Brown, NW7N from Tucson, and he's the AMSAT area coordinator. And we have Gary Beaver, N7NQM, and he's a local AMSAT contact. Larry and Gary, I want to welcome you to Ham Radio and More. And how are you guys doing today?
Doing just fine, Lynn. I appreciate being here and the opportunity to to talk about amateurs, amateurs in space.
Okay. And Larry, you online?
Yes, sure am, man. And definitely appreciate the opportunity to point out some of the advantages of satellite communications to your listeners.
Okay, to begin with, why don't Larry, why don't you just begin by telling us exactly what AMSAT is?
Well, AMSAT stands for the Radio Amateur Satellite Corporation. It's a nonprofit corporation. It was formed in 1969 to promote the development, launching, operation, and use of amateur radio satellites. And currently there are a number of satellites, there are over 12 satellites that are up there available for use by ham radio operators. Many of these were built by AMSAT, and most of them are operated, controlled by AMSAT. And then, of course, there's people like Gary and myself that are out trying to spread the word and bring some of the information necessary to use these satellites to the general public and the amateur radio public.
Well, before I forget, I want to congratulate you. Larry, in November, won an award for an outstanding achievement or being an active regional coordinator in AMSAT. So, again, I congratulate you, Larry. So we obviously have an active AMSAT coordinator here, and makes AMSAT more visible here in the community. And Gary was telling me that he has only been in AMSAT about 2 years now, and boy, from what we were discussing before the show, he sure got into it.
Yeah, I started, I've been a ham radio operator for about less than 3 years here now, and I guess I really kind of got the license for the purpose of actually getting into the amateur satellite hobby there. And ever since I've got into it, it's just been incredibly fascinating. And it's been kind of a step-type hobby or part of amateur to be able to get into. It's just kind of one piece at a time to be able to start to work the satellites. Start off working the HF satellites, then go to Oscar 13, and then go to the PAC-SATs, and then finally to the UOSATs. And now I've actually gained access to about all the satellites that are really flying up there, with the exception of the weather satellites, which are also part of the AMSAT system there.
Okay, and you know, I just want you to tell everybody how you got it, because I thought this was very interesting how Gary got involved with, just as a side note, amateur radio or into the AMSAT. You just explain exactly as you told me.
Well,
I thought it was neat.
Yeah, it was just kind of a fluke. I go periodically into a mailbox store over there at 17th Avenue in Camelback, and a few times I walked into the HRO store, and I just kind of was looking around in there, and it just kind of, after so many times going in there, I just decided this is something that I just had to get into.
Interesting. So it just shows sometimes location's important. Okay. Larry, let's talk about, you've got 13 satellites, or 12 satellites up in orbit. What does that mean? I mean, they're circling the Earth, I would presume. How did they get up there? Who launches them?
Well, they've been launched in several different ways. Ariane, the European Space Agency and everything, has launched many of our satellites. In fact, we are their most frequent flyer. We're not necessarily their best-paying customer, because they give us a pretty good discount on launch services. But the Soviets in their space program have developed a number of independent satellites, some of which are part of the Oscar series. Oscar, by the way, stands for Orbital Satellite Carrying Amateur Radio. And they have launched a number of satellites that we also have access to and can use.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's been some of the older satellites were launched on various United States launch systems.
Okay, well, explain to us now what makes one satellite different from another satellite, or what one can do that another one can't, or what they can do, etc.
Well, all the satellites are designed for specific purposes. The AMSAT maintains both a very strong commitment to amateur radio communication and education in general. And so many of the satellites, almost all of them, have some kind of educational experiment or some kind of experimental application as well. And the satellites are designed to use specific frequencies, and some of them are designed when we first started talking over the satellites, we started using what was called Mode A, and that was basically transmit on 2 meters and receive on 10 meters. And that was the first mode, and some of the satellites are still being launched that use that mode, to where the people that developed equipment to use Mode A are not being obsoleted, as well as that's one of the easiest modes to get into using the satellites. Then other satellites have other frequencies that they use that will require different equipment in order to communicate through them.
A naive question might be that I have is, why would you want to transmit on 2 meters and receive on 10 instead of receive and transmit on 10, on 2 or 10?
Okay. Well, the satellite is basically a very fancy repeater. And basically it's what's called a bandpass repeater. And you know, on our 2 meter repeaters, we have to change the frequencies by 600 kilohertz and have, for those of you who are familiar, a very big cavity filter and everything to take and let the transmitter not desense the receiver. We don't have the advantage of being able to carry that on the satellite. And so what we can do to prevent that receiver desense is go with crossband repeaters, and which is basically what a satellite is. And therefore, we transmit on one band, and then to the satellite. The satellite receives on that band. It transmits on another band to us, where it does not desense its receiver. And not only that, the repeaters we commonly use on 2 meters are basically one channel. That means one person can talk on them at a time and hear. That's fine for something the size of Tucson or Phoenix. It sometimes gets a little crowded, but can you imagine that for a satellite that sees all of the United States at one time? So they've gone with satellite that anything it hears over a given spectrum, it translates that and retransmits it into another band of frequencies. And that lets multiple users use the satellite at once.
How much power does a satellite put out? Just out of curiosity.
Well, the biggest and most complex satellite we've launched to date is Oscar 13, and it had at its peak about 50 watts of solar power generating capability. That's down to probably less than 30 watts now. Any individual transponder, the transmitter that retransmitted all those signals was putting out, I believe, in the neighborhood of about 5 to 8 watts.
And so these are powered by solar power supplies?
That's correct.
Oh, see, we were talking about solar power just a few minutes ago. I guess they should pick one up at Antennas West. No. okay, why don't we hit our trivia question that we've got for this week and see if there's any AMSAT Trekkies out there that are very knowledgeable. Our phone number is 241-1510 or 1-800-293-KFNN, 241-1510, 1-800-293-KFNN. And this question is very simple. When was the first amateur radio satellite launched? The month and year is all we need. When was the first amateur radio satellite launched? And we have a nice prize for the winner. So give us a call at 241-1510 or 1-800-293-KFNN. And if you're watching a football game, turn it off and listen to the show. Okay. How easy is it to get into AMSAT and get interested? We have a gentleman in front of us. Again, he's only been in it for a couple of years. Once you went in and got involved, how much money did you spend? Oh my God, you got mucho bucks. How easy is it to get involved? How inexpensively can an individual get involved with AMSAT?
Well, it's possible to do it with RS-1011 and do it with an HF radio and basically transmit on 15 meters for the uplink and receive on 10 meters. So just by using an HF radio with a Yagi, it's possible. The trick is to know where the satellite is and when it's going to be visible. And that's where a computer really comes in handy, and a piece of satellite software that AMSAT sells it comes in to be very good. And basically, if you know where it is, you can transmit to it. And that's working RS-1011. Now, that's a low Earth orbiting satellite, and it's within view for about 10, maybe 12 minutes at a time. The other way to do it would be like with Oscar 13. Oscar 13 does require a multi-mode rig and amplifiers and various circular polarized antennas.
Another naive question. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that long QSOs are not something of the norm in satellites? In other words, you only have an 8 to 10 minute window there.
Well, that's only in the low Earth orbiting satellites. We call those polar orbiters, and basically they fly from pole to pole, and then the Earth turns beneath them, and they come within view like twice or one set passes every 12 hours, roughly. Oscar 13, though, is on an elliptical orbit, which is like an egg-shaped orbit. And what that does is when it starts to pull away from the Earth, which can be over, say, over Europe or over America, it starts to pull away from the Earth. It in our eyes, it appears to slow down. And as it starts to slow down, we can conceivably have about maybe 4 to 5 hours of prime talk time where the satellite antennas are basically pointed at us, and it's possible to have incredibly long QSOs without interruptions. And also another nice thing about it is, you know, QRM is basically not seen up there, and it's possible to have like up to 20 QSOs going simultaneously off Oscar 13. And also another thing is, when you're using Oscar 13 in this kind of mode, if it's over the U.S., for example, Europe and Japan, Asia will also be within view, and it's possible to have a round table conversation with maybe 3 or 4 continents at once.
And do you guys, I imagine that you do, send QSL cards back and forth?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I had one evening here, I'd say it was about maybe 6 months ago or so, where I was the one of the few American stations on the bird. It was like 2 a.m. in the morning. And I got dogpiled on by Europe because apparently they don't hear Arizona in there that often. Basically, I ended up filling out about 30 QSL cards off a one-hour pass.
Does AMSAT produce or give away certificates, for awards if you talk to 5 million people or something?
Yes. You know, you can apply for awards. There is basically the same type of award structure that you use on HF. And right now I'm working on the All States Award. And I've secured Alaska and Wyoming, which are two hard ones to get. And I'm well on the way to that.
Does anybody have DXCC and satellite?
Sure, people do.
Sure.
Oh, there are. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Why not, of course, because it's so easy to talk all over the world.
Sure, sure. And another nice thing about it is the HF antennas that you use for communications on HF are much, much larger than what you need to be able to work with the amateur satellites. The amateur satellite antennas are typically much smaller and more compact, and so they're less intrusive to the neighbors.
Can you get onto satellite without a beam antenna? Can you use just a vertical that you have standing up?
Well, typically not. I have been able to hear Oscar 13 with a ground plane, but that's very, very rare, only on an unusual pass where there's a lot of activity. And typically the signals are just almost in the noise. You almost have to have some kind of a pointable Yagi antenna and a preamp to be able to realistically work Oscar 13. And you also have to have a power amplifier to be able to transmit up to it.
Go ahead,
Larry.
Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make the point that the low orbit satellites, that is true of Oscar 13, you pretty much need some gain antennas. But many of the low orbiting satellites and everything, you can take and contact them with simple antennas, such as verticals, since their signals are quite a bit stronger.
Yeah, I've been able to do that. When those lower satellites tend to reach a little bit of a peak there. I was wondering, Larry, you built a special antenna, I think called a Lindenblad antenna. I was wondering how that worked out for you.
It's working out pretty well, and it does offer some advantages over the ground plane and everything and the J-poles. And it's a little bit stronger, and it is a circularly polarized antenna. It's not as good as having a beam pointed at the satellite, but it's working out quite well, and I think it's definitely worth following up on. In fact, there was the latest AMSAT journal. There was two articles on the Lindenblad.
Okay, and you're primarily using the Lindenblad antenna for like the microsats.
Well, at the moment, I've been listening to the microsats on it. I plan on using the Lindenblad for talking to the Mir space station as well. Any of the low orbiting satellites, my goal is to not have to use beams, but to use omnidirectional antennas, so I don't have to take and track it, run my rotators very rapidly across the sky and keep track of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. Do we have a winner on line two? Oh, okay. We do have a winner. Did you get it? Hello, welcome to Ham Radio and More.
How do you do?
Who is this?
Charles Garcia.
Oh, okay. How are you doing today, Charles?
Okay, yourself?
Pretty good, thank you. Here it is. I didn't look on the other side of the paper. Sorry about that, Ray. Okay, what is the answer? When was the first AMSAT satellite sent up?
December 12, 1961.
And how did you know that?
Oh, I looked it up.
You're a store of information there. Okay. Well, you're going to win. I'm not sure if you've won a Sundrop T-shirt before.
No.
No, okay. Well, good. Since you're going to win a nice Sundrop T-shirt. Sundrop is Goodwill's ambassador for the state of Arizona. My son there is sitting there wearing a nice, colorful Sundrop T-shirt. And Sundrop really is where sunny, happy things in the state of Arizona are happening. It's great for the youth, and hopefully we're going to have Sundrop out at the convention, the HamFest, March 21st at Scottsdale Community College, promote some fun, and people can bring the family and make more of a family day than just a swap fest. But anyway, if anyone wants more information on Sundrop, it's 275-7450, 275-7450. And Charles, Sundrop will get in touch with you in the next week.
Okay.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Okay, congratulations.
Bye-bye.
73. Okay. It's the new year, and Wallpaper World wants you to start it off right with some new window coverings to spruce up your home. At Wallpaper World, a company that's been in the Valley since 1977, you know, you can choose from all the major brands like Levalor, Bally, Graber, Kirsch, Hoover Drape, Chic, Duet, Hunter Douglas, and more, many more. And Wallpaper World is known for three great things, amongst others. One, they have the largest selection in town of custom window coverings because they represent all the major brands. You don't just go in there and see one brand of blinds. You see all of them. As well as they manufacture their own top quality products themselves locally. Two, they give personal service. They don't just have clerks to take your order. They always have people in their stores that are interior designers. They assist you free of charge in your selection. And three, they have the lowest prices anywhere on comparable items. You can probably find a place that'll sell a blind for less money, but my goodness, don't look at it wrong. It may bend just by looking at it. But so on a comparable item, on the same quality, nobody undersells Wallpaper World. If you want the best there is, Wallpaper World has it for you at the lowest prices anywhere. And remember, too, Wallpaper World takes all the risk out of buying custom window coverings because they measure and install for you, and they do that free of charge with a very minimal purchase. So really, there's no reason at all to go anywhere else. And one more thing, if you mention Ham Radio and More, you receive an extra 10% off their already low discounted prices. So go to the nearest Wallpaper World showroom or call 272-4788, 272-4788 for the location nearest you or for more information. In fact, Wallpaper World really does make selecting custom window coverings an enjoyable experience. Okay, guys, you're listening to KFNN Radio, AM 1510, and our phone number is 241-1510 or 1-800-293-KFNN. If you have any questions about AMSAT, the gurus are here ready to answer, so please give us a call, 241-1510 or 1-800-293-KFNN. Okay, in addition to voice, that you've had QSOs and stuff on AMSAT, on the satellites, what else can you do on it? And I know we were talking about PacSat and others. Gary?
There's been a whole series of satellites that have launched recently called the microsats, and those are basically digital satellites, the low Earth orbiting, so they're typically within view anywhere from 8 to 10 minutes per pass. And they run anywhere from 1,200 baud to 9,600 baud. The Eurosat's running about 9,600 bauds, and the PacSats, there's two of them that run at 1,200 baud that are.
And to explain that, baud is the rate at which we pass data.
Yeah, that's the rate. It's similar to a telephone modem sending data over a telephone line, and 9,600 being the fastest that I'm aware of that's available on a telephone modem at this time. But 1,200 baud, basically, that just that requires what they call a PSK modem, and which is a different kind of tones other than what we're used to on packet. But it's the same similar type format, and it works just off your microphone in and your speaker output on your radio, mm-hmm. and basically it works just similar to packet. At the 9,600 rate, that doesn't sound like, it doesn't have any tones to it. It sounds like basic static because the data is coming so fast. And that's what the European stored and forwarding satellites are doing. And they work similar to a local BBS mailbox system, and that you can send, upload files, datas, pictures, programs into the satellite. And then you can download, which is receive pictures and data and so on from the satellites as well.
And in that short 8-minute span of time, how much data does it dump onto you?
Well, at 1,200 baud for PacSat and the LuSat, okay, you're looking at about 10,000 bits. For the 9,600 baud. Okay, you can look at about 1.5 megabytes, which 1.5 megabytes, to give you an idea, the actual Windows program that we use on our computers, that's about 1.5 megabytes. You can download almost the entire Windows program, which comes on about, I think it comes on like 5 floppies or something. You can download that entire program if, all of that satellite time was devoted to you. You can download that entire program as it goes overhead. And then there's also UO-22, which is a USAT bird, which takes photographs and has an actual working camera on board taking snapshots of the Earth as it flies over. And that's available also. And their pictures are about 350,000 bits, and you can download those.
And you're talking about some slow scan television activities.
Oh yeah, there's that goes back to Oscar 13, which gives you that long period of time to be able to transmit and receive, and you can do slow scan TV off of that. I've also heard packet and RIDI off of that as well, and as well as CW Morse code and voice sideband, of course.
Okay. We're going to go to take a small break and listen to Nick's Corner, Nick Seuss, W7ZMD, and find out this week what's in Nick's Corner. I believe he's going to be talking about, what is he going to be talking about? I believe HF, I'm not sure, but we'll find out in a minute. So, Nick, take it away.
Thank you, Len. This is Nick Seuss from Nick's Corner. This week, bringing you an explanation of types of communications modes in use and some explanation as to what frequencies you can hear specific modes being used. This is a general discussion of the types of signals that will be heard across the radio spectrum, but primarily in use in the range of 550 kHz to 30 MHz. AM amplitude modulation is used by broadcast stations in the 550 to 1600 kHz spectrum. KFNN is on 1510 kHz, which is in this range. FM frequency modulation is used by broadcast stations in the 88 to 108 MHz range. The advantage of FM over AM is that it is immune to most man-made interference and provides better audio fidelity. Was originally used for real high-fidelity music programming, and of course, as you know, it's the best preferred mode for music these days. SSB, single sideband. Actually, this should be called LSB for lower sideband and USB for upper sideband because they are different. Convention and amateur radio separates these modes dependent upon the frequency in use. On 7 MHz and below, lower sideband is used. On 14 MHz and above, upper sideband is used. This is a communications mode primarily for voice use. The fidelity of this mode is limited like the telephone. Because of the narrow bandwidth, it provides more effective voice communication range. CW, continuous wave, is used to send radio telegraphy code. The da-da-da-da-da-da-da stuff. Effective communications can be achieved with a much narrower bandwidth, covering longer distances with the same power. RTTY, radio teletype, sounds like a buzzsaw. Fax, or facsimile, sounds like a buzzsaw with a slipping chain. These two modes require accessories to be intelligibly received. They are mentioned but won't be discussed further. There is also, as you know, FM stereo, which when it first... Now, virtually every home radio has this as a standard feature. Currently, there are a few AM stereo broadcast stations in the Phoenix area. There are a few receivers available to take advantage of this feature, but it's not become a hot standard item yet. SSB, CW, and AM can be listened to on the amateur bands in the HF spectrum. There is 3.5 MHz, which is also known as 80 meters, 7 MHz, 40 meters, 14 MHz, 20 meters, 21 MHz, 15 meters, and the 28 MHz band, which is 10 meters. Many of you will have a radio around that has shortwave bands on it. If it has a control on it to allow it to receive CW and or SSB, with the above information and a little determination, you can probably receive some signals. Listen in the 20, 15, and 10 meter range during the daytime, and listen in the lower ranges of 40 and 80 meters during the evening hours. If your HF receiver has the capability of receiving FM, FM might be heard on 10 meters near 29 MHz during the day. FM is a mode primarily used in the VHF spectrum and can be heard about 144 MHz on 2 meters, also 220 MHz, which is the 1.25 meter ham band, and on 440 MHz, which is the 70 centimeter ham band. AM, FM, sideband, and CW, these modes are used by both commercial and amateur radio stations, but there are different standards that are used by different services. For instance, FM has different standards of deviation for commercial and amateur service. This is why a normal AM, FM radio won't be able to receive amateur FM signals even if the frequency range is available. That wraps up our discussion for this week. If you have any specific items you would like to hear about or a specific item you would like to have reviewed on this segment, please call or write Len or me and let us know. I cannot know what you'd like to hear about without input. Without input, I will simply review items which are hoped will be of general interest. Thank you. This is Nick's Product Review Corner, presented by Nick Sues, W7ZMD. Phone number 992-4133. Amateur radio equipment repair is my business and is located near 40th Street and Bell Road. Again, the phone number 992-4133. Now back to you, Len.
Okay, thank you, Nick, and appreciate it. Have you taken a good look a good hard look at some of the great products AEA has. I mean, recently, wow, and I mean wow, their new Isaloop HF antenna has been shipped, and it really sets a new standard for 10 to 30 megahertz antennas in a very small spot. I mean, you don't need a big area to be able to use their Isaloop. And the AEA WeatherFax is a super software and hardware combination. Its features include an on-screen miniscope tuning display, a slideshow mode, and much, much more. And of course, the PK-232 is the world standard in multi-mode controller technology, with over 50,000 of them sold worldwide. Their VSB-70 vestibule sideband amateur television transceiver is the best around, and it really does stop wasting spectrum that regular ATV transceivers using double stand sideband do. And don't forget about the MM3 Morse machine, the ultimate keyer. It has a DX simulator, a QSO simulator, a random letter generator, paddle reverse commands to accommodate different types of paddles, and much, much more. So really, don't you owe it to yourself to see the AEA complete line? You will be impressed, really, by all they have and all their products and what they do. See the complete AEA line at Ham Radio Outlet, which is at 17th Avenue and Camelback here in Phoenix. Or you can call AEA direct at their toll-free number, 1-800-432-8873. That's 1-800-432-8873. And they'll send you a free 1992 catalog. That's AEA Incorporated, really the best products around. You know, all these things that AMSAT does, I mean, they have all these satellites in orbit. It costs a lot of money to send them up. They have so many different things going on. How do they support all this?
Okay, AMSAT supports its activities through basically our membership dues, which are very nominal, $30 a year, as well as the software programs that are developed. Many people develop them and donate them to AMSAT, or other people write books and donate them to AMSAT. And we use these items as fundraisers to help finance the upcoming satellites. And, of course, then our individual donations at times for special purposes and special projects like the new Phase 3D satellite.
Okay. And so you guys, of course, sell lots of different tracking programs. You want to talk about all the different tracking programs you guys have?
Well, there's too many of them to talk about all of them.
Okay. Well, a few of the best.
Okay. Well, they're available for all the major computers, including the Macintosh and Atari and the Commodore C64 and the Apple. The favorites right now seem to be in the IBM PC line. And there's two exceptional programs, QuickTrack and InstantTrack, that are available to AMSAT members and for a nominal donation of $50. And both of these programs offer really outstanding capabilities. They give you a map display of the world on the screen. And show you where the satellite is, and shows you the coverage area of the Earth that the satellite can see. They will do a good job of forecasting when the satellite will be visible in your particular area, when the next pass will be. And just almost anything you can think of as far as wanting to do, as far as telling you when the satellite's available, where to point your antennas, what the Doppler shift is. Instant track will tell you what the sky temperature behind the satellite is. Will tell you what the Doppler shift is. Will tell you what the pointing angles of Oscar 13 and Oscar 10 are, how far their antennas are pointing from you. And we'll give you a display that lets you graphically see this. And so they're really amazing pieces of software.
And I know I'm looking right now at your tracking programs. I mean, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You keep updating these things?
Well, as the authors have the time to update them and everything, they are updated, and new versions come out and are used for as fundraisers for AMSAT. many of the authors of some of the better tracking programs are also involved in keeping our satellites going. And so it's a little bit of a time available basis for them to be able to update the programs. But whenever they can, they certainly do.
And you, as well as all the other organizations that are in the world, have nets. You want to talk a little about, from Phoenix, what AMSAT nets you have that we can, people can listen to and get interested in?
Okay. Well, the AMSAT puts on several weekly nets. On Sunday afternoon at noon, there's a 20-meter net, and the pre-net warm-up starts an hour and a half earlier than that, and it's basically a worldwide net. And at each of these nets, basically the latest AMSAT information is distributed. The people that check in have an opportunity to check in and ask questions or make comments about what they've been doing lately. And there's later in the afternoon, at the same time, there's also a 15-meter net going. And Ray Dudley down in Green Valley runs the 15-meter net every Sunday. And then also there's nets on 17 meters later in the afternoon Sunday. And on Tuesday evenings, there's the North American AMSAT nets. Now, these are on 80 meters at 3885. I guess I ought to give the 20-meter frequency as well. It's 14280, 282 in that neighborhood, depending on QRM.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other really good HF net is the Tuesday night. There's a net on 80 meters. It's on 3840. And there's basically three different nets. There's an East Coast net, and then an hour, they have the net for an hour starting at 8 o'clock their time. Then at 8 o'clock Central Time, the Central States net starts, and then the Pacific net starts after that. And either the Central States or the Pacific net we can generally hear here in the Arizona area. And then additional to that, we've just recently started a net for the southern and central Arizona area, including the Tucson and Phoenix area. It's on the 146.88 repeater. It's located up in the Catalina Mountains just north of Tucson and has pretty good coverage of Phoenix and real good coverage of the Tucson area. And that occurs every Wednesday night from 7 o'clock until 8 o'clock. And longer if we have questions and whatever. We distribute the same AMSAT information. The Keplerian elements, which are necessary to keep your tracking programs up to date and tracking the satellite accurately, we have that information available, as well as the people that check in. It's very much oriented towards beginners and newcomers.
Sounds like me.
From the standpoint that we're very eager to take and answer your questions, and see if we can help you find the right sources of information and help you get your station operating.
How many members are there currently in AMSAT, approximately?
Gary, do you know, at the moment, I don't know, but I think it's well over 10,000.
Yeah, I would agree. It's easily over 10,000 members right now. And we're trying to raise money right now for Phase 3D, which is the replacement for Oscar 13, which should be launching, I think, right around 1995, I think. Is that correct, Larry?
Yes, the Phase 3D satellite, which is really going to be something fabulous, is scheduled for launch in the late 1995 time frame. And we are just beginning the fundraising drive for it. It's going to be far and away the most sophisticated and the most capable satellite that amateur radio operators have ever put together and had launched.
Well, we'll talk about that. That was going to be my next question. I have a caller online, too, and let's see what Howard, N7ETB, ETP, welcome to Ham Radio and More. How are you doing today?
Not bad. Just got in. Sorry, I'd miss you. I'm just wondering, I've heard so many complaints from some of these different operators, they can't get any traffic through. Well, they don't tune into the correct traffic nets. There's one on every night, seven nights a week at 6:30. at
What are you referring to? Are you referring to AMSAT or? Are you referring to AMSAT or traffic in general?
Traffic in general.
Oh.
There's a Cactus Community Traffic Net at 145.370, seven nights a week. And some nights you get seven or eight stations checking in, others one. And they all want to get traffic out, but there's nobody there to take the traffic. So I'm just wondering what's happening. Either they don't know about these traffic nets, or they just take a chance on any net, and on any net they can't get traffic through. Some of them will take traffic, some of them won't.
Well, of course, when we were discussing nets a few minutes ago, we were talking about AMSAT.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about nets in general, I suppose you need to get to a specific traffic net, and I can't answer that because I'm not too involved with that. But if you have a specific net in general, I would try, I don't know, getting involved with whoever the net operator is, or what net control.
Well, I'm the net manager for the 2 meter Cactus net, and recently we had an operator join our net who can send traffic all over the country. The packet radio or FM or CW, etc. So that part is okay. But there's a lot of other operators that come on and you ask them to take traffic in their own locality and they won't do it. I wonder what they're on the air for in the first place.
Well, I guess we can do a show on traffic and passing traffic around. I guess that might actually be something of interest. Right now, we're not really capable of answering the question. If there's anybody out there who wants to give Howard a hand on trying to explain the problems of passing traffic, we'll be happy to take the phone call, 241-1510 or 1-800-293-KFNN. But I'm moving along, Howard. I thank you for calling.
That's quite all right.
Okay.
I'll call you again next week.
Okay, sounds
okay.
Good. Thank you. Bye-bye. Hello, welcome to Ham Radio and more. You're on the air. Hello? No? Oh, I thought you were okay. Ray. Start the new year with a new Dodge truck. And not a phone line. Start the new year with a new Dodge truck, van, or car, or how about an Oldsmobile, or Volkswagen, or how about a BMW? Or pick any vehicle you want and give Ken Nichols a call. That's Ken Nichols, WA7HXZ, the fleet manager of Linda Brack Auto Mall. Ken is always just a phone call away with the lowest prices you can get anywhere. And I mean really, no joke, Ken sells what we call fleet tail. That's right, fleet tail. You get fleet pricing direct to you. The reason Ken can do this is because of Linda Brack's super buying power and Ken's ability to work on very, very small margins. And it's not hype. Call a car company. Get their price on your favorite vehicle with whatever options you want. Then call Ken. He'll beat their price with absolutely no pressure, no hassles, and no negotiations. Ken gives the super low price immediately. He has two computers on his desk with all the software necessary to give you quick quotes on the vehicle of your choice equipped just the way you want it. And Ken provides service before and most importantly after the sale. Ken really does care. I know it sounds too good to be true, but listen to me. Give Ken a call. Let him prove it to you. 228-2336. 228-2336. You'll be happy you gave Ken a call, really. 228-2336. Ken Nichols, fleet prices direct to you. Larry, you were just talking about Phase 3D satellites, satellite project that's going to be taking place. I want to elaborate a little bit more on that. I have a a sheet on it, and it says $5 million the projected cost. My goodness. Well, tell us a little more about it.
Okay, well, that's right. That's the expected projected cost, and that is basically an order of magnitude bigger than any other ham radio satellite we've ever built. It's a worldwide effort. There's over 12 nations participating in the project at this point in time, and it's going to be a high-orbit satellite in an elliptical orbit, very much like Oscar 13. It's going to have, well, where Oscar 13 has about 30 watts of power-generating capability, Phase 3D is going to be able to have over 800 watts of solar cell, solar power generation.
Wow.
And it's going to have transponders on all of the ham radio bands where we have satellite allocations from 10 meters to 10 gigahertz. And basically looked at the projected orbit that they have worked out so far. The satellite will be visible and usable from the Arizona area about 36 hours out of every 48. So even though it is in an orbit around the Earth, it's going to be almost usable three-fourths of the time from Arizona.
So 36 hours, like, continuously, and then off for, like, 12?
No.
No?
So actually, during that 48 hours period of time, it will be about two or three-hour periods of time, or two periods of time during that 48 hours when the satellite would not be available. And those, each of those would be like 4 hours or something like that. Other than that, it would be continuous.
And this will be a voice as well as data?
It will have a single sideband voice. They're projecting that using some new digital ATV techniques that we will be able to have full motion amateur TV through the satellite. The satellite, because it's going to have so much more power capable, and it's going to be have bigger antennas available, it's going to be considerably stronger signals than we've been used to.
Well, let me stop you right there. Does that mean that you're suggesting that we may actually be able to have amateur television equipment beamed up to this satellite and have fast scan television beamed throughout the world?
Mm-hmm. That is one of the plans for the satellite. Now, it's not using ATV as we currently know it, but using the conferencing or TV systems that are in use now, where they digitize the TV, and basically you can get through with having a full motion TV system with voice in basically 1.5 kilohertz spectrum of space. And it doesn't take much more spectrum than what we're used to, and there's a group of ham radio operators that are developing this technology and everything for use, not only for the satellites, but also for the ATV public. This is going to be a very expensive project, and we're looking at raising the funding and the manpower necessary to do this right now.
And you're looking at projected
1995 launch.
Is already set up as to...
Yes, we have a launch date and launch commitment with Ariane. And in fact, if we don't launch, if the satellite's not ready to launch, we have to have a dummy mass with the same moments of inertia and everything, the same weight to take the satellite's place. So third, fourth quarter 1995, we'll be launching something into space.
Well, $5 million, it sounds like you guys are serious.
Well, this satellite will have almost the capability to take, and well, it will have the capability to let you take and operate on at least some orbits when it's most favorable, mobile from your car, and have basically worldwide communication capability.
Over the ham bands?
Over the ham bands.
And of course, you need a beam in your car? No. Okay.
Well, it may be a low gain beam, and it may be that you may not be able to do it to 2 meters. It may require 70 centimeters, 1.2 gigahertz, or 1.2 and 2.4 gigahertz to do that. But if you have suitable equipment in your car, you will be able to operate mobile.
Amazing. Is there any mobile AMSAT being done now? Or gets a little impossible, right?
Well, there's a little bit being done on the Oscar, the low orbit satellites. I know of guys that sit there and have two vertical antennas on their car and operate the Russian RS-1213 and RS-1011 satellites, which is 2 meters transmit and 10 meters receive. They can operate that mobile.
Do you guys get involved at all with MIR? I mean, it's not really a satellite. I guess it's a space station. Is that something that AMSAT gets involved in, or just...
AMSAT tries to be involved in basically all aspects of amateur radio space communication. MIR is one of the things that we do, I won't say sponsor, but we do promote the activity of. And I'd like to point out right now that that's one of the very easy ways of getting involved in the amateur radio space operations.
Yes, I've even connected to MIR on my packet.
Yeah, and on using just nothing more than a 2-meter FM transceiver, it's possible to talk to the cosmonauts up on the MIR space station.
Okay, we're getting real short of time. Let's say if anybody's the people that are interested in AMSAT, give us some numbers, address, etc., how they can get more information, get involved, and actually become members.
Okay, well, myself or Gary are area coordinators here in Arizona, and we would be glad to provide more information. My phone number down here in Tucson is 886-1957, and my address is 2721 South Black Moon. It's in Tucson, and the zip code is 85730.
Okay, and Gary, would you like to give yours?
Okay, my local phone number is in Phoenix is 993-8266. And my office number is 375-0013.
So if you are interested, give Larry a call in Tucson at 886-1957 or Gary Beaver here in Phoenix, 993-8266. And any last things we can say with about 30 seconds left?
Well, we will definitely have AMSAT booths and all the... ham radio or ham fest and everything coming up.
Oh, that's right. You will be at the ham fest in Scottsdale March 21st and have a booth there and show a demonstration of what it's all about. It's one of the more exciting, on the verge of technology or new frontiers, I guess.
And we look forward to assisting the various hams in Arizona to get involved in AMSAT any way we can.
Okay, I thank you, Larry. I thank you, Gary, for participating. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to my sponsors, Wallpaper Road Antennas West, AEA Incorporated, and Ken Nichols of Linda Brock.
Ham Radio and More with Lynn Winkler, KB7, LPW.